produced by the Dutch company known as Hotel Modern, camp is at once theater, puppetry, audiovisual show, and a sort of immersive reality programming.
I think this is the first time that I've given a thank you speech.
I came out of the closet at 15 years old when I was in high school, and I can assure you that I was never invited to any parties.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Same-gender couples challenge Japan's marriage inequality, unique theater piece creates concentration camp experience, and queer women put the grr in Grammy. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 16th, 2019. 13 same-gender couples used Valentine's Day, February 14th, to file coordinated marriage equality lawsuits in district courts across Japan. While a growing number of local governments have granted minimal legal recognition to lesbian and gay couples, the ultra-conservative administration of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has refused to even allow debate on the issue in the National Diet or Parliament. The Associated Press reports that Abe's government is working to restore paternalism to Japan and has already pushed moral education classes in schools to teach traditional family values. The 13 plaintiff couples, 5 lesbian and 8 gay, are challenging the government's denial of marriage equality as unconstitutional and discriminatory. The couples are also each demanding compensation of 1 million yen, about $9,000, for the emotional distress the government has inflicted on them for not allowing them to legally marry their partners, though they say it's not about the money, but about equality. Article 24 of Japan's constitution stipulates that marriage shall be based only on the mutual consent of both sexes, and it shall be maintained through mutual cooperation with the equal rights of husband and wife as a basis. The plaintiff's lawyers argue that Article 24's intent was to preserve gender equality and individual respect, and that it does not prohibit marriage between two adults of the same gender. The government, however, says the article applies only to heterosexual couples, and that the term husband and wife in civic law and family registration law refers to a man and a woman. Takaharu Kato, one of the couple's attorneys, told Gay Star News that he expects the court cases to last at least 5 years.
Taiwan has been expected to be the first in Asia to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. The island's constitutional court, in late May 2017, ordered the legislative yuan to pass marriage equality legislation within the next 2 years. May 2019 is fast approaching, and the court ruling said that if lawmakers fail to act by that time, marriage equality automatically takes effect. According to veteran gay journalist Rex Wagner, Taiwan's government has until February 24th to send a bill to the legislative yuan in order to beat the end of May deadline. To complicate matters, voters in November told the government to protect the rights of same-gender couples in cohabitation on a permanent basis in ways other than changing the civil code. They also specifically approved of less-than-equal civil partnerships for lesbian and gay couples. If the legislative yuan passes any legislation that doesn't fully comply with the Constitutional Court's marriage equality edict, it's a virtual certainty that activists will go back to court to challenge it as failing to comply with that edict.
Chile's Supreme Court overturned a lower court decision this week that had dismissed a marriage equality lawsuit filed by journalist Ramon Gomez and graphic designer Gonzalo Velasquez. The justices found that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples could be a violation of Article 20 of the Political Constitution of the Republic. Their attorney said that once the case is returned to the Court of Appeals, a response from the Civil Registry would be requested to explain why the agency denied the application for marriage to Ramon Gomez and Gonzalo Velasquez. The couple has already been together for 19 years and co-wrote the children's book Nicholas Has Two Papas. Chile has offered less-than-marriage civil unions to lesbian gay couples since 2015. A ruling by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in January 2017 ordered all countries in the region without marriage equality that have signed the American Convention on Human Rights, and that includes Chile, to open the civil institution to same-gender couples. So one way or another, marriage equality is eventually coming to Chile. Gomez and Velasquez received word of the High Court victory appropriately on Valentine's Day.
Justices of the Constitutional Chamber of Honduras met with LGBTQ advocates this week to discuss the marriage equality case they've filed with the court. The magistrates met with top religious leaders last week who, of course, cited their interpretations of scripture to strongly voice their opposition to equality. Honduras is also a signatory to the American Convention on Human Rights and, like Chile, is ultimately bound by the marriage equality order issued by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights.
Arguments concluded on February 11th in the Grand Court of the Cayman Islands in a challenge to its denial of civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. The government argued that the Constitution's intent is to ensure that marriage is only available to one man and one woman. Their lawyer also questioned whether sexual orientation is even, in fact, an immutable characteristic. Lawyers for the plaintiff lesbian couple, Chantel Day and Vicky Bodden-Bush, told the High Court that denying the institution to same-gender couples is clearly unconstitutional discrimination. The Caymans are a self-governing British overseas territory. According to local news reports, the Honorable Chief Justice is expected to announce his decision in a matter of weeks.
The Legal Affairs Committee of Switzerland's House of Representatives approved draft legislation this week to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples, including their right to adopt children. It's one of the few countries in Europe without marriage equality. But the committee said it wants more time to discuss the part of the bill that allows sperm donations for lesbian couples, which are currently only available to married heterosexual couples. Swiss voters approved less-than-marriage-registered partnerships for queer couples in 2005. There's been no timetable announced for how long the further discussion of the sperm donation question might take, nor any indication as to the further advance of marriage equality. But this week's parliamentary committee approval, on Valentine's Day, appears to be yet another reflection of the people leading their leaders. In a poll conducted more than 2 years ago, about 7 in 10 Swiss citizens said that same-gender couples should be allowed to get married.
The homophobic assault by a group of men on a gay journalist and his friend in Auckland, New Zealand this week marred an otherwise festive Big Gay Out, the country's biggest annual celebration of LGBTQ pride. AM show reporter Aziz Al-Sa'afin told News Hub that his friend was beaten to a pulp while he himself escaped with a black eye. They were yelling out, "Fags, homos, you're going to hell," he said. The perpetrators were, at last report, still on the loose. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern paid a high-profile visit to the 20th annual Big Gay Out and spoke at the rally, which drew an estimated 10,000 people. Labour MP Maria Lubeck rallied support for her bill to ban so-called conversion therapy. And Labour MP and former TV weatherman Tomati Coffey announced what in a good chunk of the 20th century used to be called a blessed event.
What I love about Big Gay Out is this is a day where we all come together, all types of people under the rainbow umbrella, and it's a beautiful thing. We have all kinds of modern families going on and represented here today, so I applaud that. And I guess I wanted to seize this opportunity at the biggest gay event in the country right now to share the news that me and my partner over there, we're expecting a baby in July.
And finally, the first openly queer U.S. politician to be taken seriously as a legitimate Democratic candidate for president, 37-year-old South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, was a guest on TV's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert this week. He came out during a re-election campaign in 2015 at the same time that Mike Pence was the governor of Indiana and won with 80% of the vote. During the wide-ranging interview, Buttigieg provided a stark reminder of who would become president if Donald Trump is removed from office before the end of his term.
So, did you work with Mike Pence?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the job of a mayor to work with anybody who can benefit the city.
So good guy? Would I like him?
If he's nice, I mean, if he were here, you'd think he's a nice guy to your face, but he's also just fanatical. He really believes. I mean, he's written that, you know, cigarettes don't kill, and I think he seems to think the universe was created a few thousand years ago, and that people like me get up in the morning and decide to be gay. And the thing about it is, if that was a choice, it was a choice that was made way above my pay grade. And so what he doesn't realize is that his quarrel is with my creator. My marriage has moved me closer to God, and I wish he respected that.
U.S. presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 16th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the ever-updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
The way that I've been embraced by Americana music and roots and country music has been heartening to me as a gay kid from Seattle. It's been a big deal in my life, and I appreciate it very much.
Queer Women Rule on Grammy Night later in the program. $6 million. That's the statistic that comes to mind when you think of Jews murdered by the Nazis during World War II. However, no one knows how many people were actually exterminated. Besides the Jewish victims, 10 million Soviet citizens and prisoners of war, 2 million Poles, 300,000 Serbs, 250,000 disabled people, 200,000 Roma, 2,000 Jehovah's Witnesses, an undetermined number of political and resistance activists, and 70,000 so-called asocials, including repeat criminal offenders and homosexual men, all snuffed out in the Nazi purge. This Way Out's John Dyer V went to the recent Los Angeles theatrical production of the Dutch import Camp. Don't be fooled. Despite the possibly festive-sounding title, another kind of camp takes the stage.
Before the show, while waiting in the lobby of the funky Red Cat Theater and gallery space at LA's Downtown Disney Hall, I couldn't help but notice that the gathering audience members were being carefully herded to various spaces along the hallway, near the theater doorway. An utterly normal practice for waiting theater patrons, but in this instance, the upcoming production was anything but normal. Produced by the Dutch company known as Hotel Modern, Camp is at once theater, puppetry, audiovisual show, and a sort of immersive reality programming. Oh, it's also a most effective history lesson, despite the fact that there is essentially no dialogue throughout the show. An edited quote from the program tells us that the entire stage, which is completely visible as you enter the auditorium, is filled with an elaborate and meticulously rendered scale model of the Polish Nazi concentration camp Auschwitz, as it existed during World War II. Buildings, train tracks, individuals, and connected groups of human figures are all manipulated by three performers. Herman Helle, Arlene Hornweg, and Pauline Kalker are the three Dutch visual and performing artists, and we learn that Kalker's grandfather was a victim of the horrific Auschwitz extermination machine. As a tonal soundtrack of barked German commands, environmental noises, and other sound effects plays, the audience witnesses daily life and death at Auschwitz. The performance artists also wear tiny cameras that can project whatever moment or scene is desired onto a large screen at the back of the stage. It probably doesn't sound terribly dramatic to hear that three people, on hands and knees most of the time, are playing with models that project on a screen. But as you sit and watch the newest group of terrified victims arrive at the camp, dazed by degradation and torture, and end up herded into a large room designed specifically for slaughter, the cumulative horror is overwhelming. There is no singular character or group of people in focus, and the impersonal and meticulous evil of what is occurring weighs down on the soul. We silently watch what we know happened to 6 million human beings not that long ago. The audience's remove from the actual time and place of this genocide allows the rational mind to ponder its ramifications, still reverberating today. The show is not terribly long, a little over an hour, but it's more than enough time to dwell in that land of utter despair and hopelessness. today, as we witness individuals and groups seeking the disenfranchisement, detention, and destruction of other ethnic and societal groupings, the lessons of Auschwitz and its ilk stand out in letters of fire. When the lights finally came up at the end, everyone was invited to come down, observe everything up close, and ask any questions. This reviewer, utterly affected, only wanted to get home and process such a brilliant, mesmerizing, and dispiriting production. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
Camp will be touring in France, the Netherlands, and Denmark next month. Check into hotelmodern.nl for details and for a fascinating visit to this unique production company.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Gay lyricist Benj Pasek and his musical ally Justin Paul could have written This Is Me for the proud crop of queer women who shined at the 61st Annual Grammy Awards instead of for their Best Compilation Soundtrack for Visual Media winning The Greatest Showman. In the context of the Recording Academy's recent controversies, the triumphs of queer-identified female performers was even sweeter. Last year, Academy President Neil Portnow was jeered for saying that women needed to step up if they wanted more Grammy recognition. This year, A-list stars like Kendrick Lamar, Childish Gambino, and Ariana Grande refused to attend, let alone perform at the show, indicating their skepticism about the award's fairness to diverse artists. While not all of the Academy's past sins could be absolved by the February 10th ceremony, the dominance of women might be a sign of hope.
Girl, why do you think you're going? Where do you think you're going, girl? Girl, why do you think you're going? Where do you think you're going, girl?
That was Lady Gaga's Joanne, winner of the Best Solo Pop Performance Grammy. More than a dozen queer women were nominated across multiple categories this year, like pansexual artist Janelle Monáe.
Girl, you make me. Boy, you make me.
Monáe dedicated her album of the year nominated Dirty Computer to her transgender brothers and sisters. The prize was not to be hers, but her performance lit up what was judged by many reviewers to be a lackluster evening. So did bisexual Cardi B's Money.
All I really want to see is the, I don't really need to be any the, all of that chick needs the.
Cardi B became the first female artist to win the Best Rap Album Grammy for Invasion of Privacy. Annie Clark, a.k.a. St. Vincent, paired up with Dua Lipa on the Grammys stage for a homoerotic mashup of their two hits. Lipa threw some shade back at Recording Academy President Neil Portnow by saying that women must have stepped up this year when she accepted her Best New Artist trophy. Before the televised show, the gender and sexuality fluid St. Vincent won her Grammys for Best Recording Package and Best Rock Song for its title track.
Seduction. I can't turn off what turns me on.
My seduction.
I can't turn off what turns me on.
Seduction.
I'll hold you like a whale.
so much. This is great. I want to say a big thank you to my friend up here, Jack Antonoff. We made a record together that I'm so proud of. And I think this is the first time that I've given a thank you speech, so here goes. I want to thank my family so much. People who worked on the record, Laura Sisk, she's in the house. Badass female engineer, Catherine Mark, Laura Stafford. And thank you to the John Silva team, the SAM office. Did he remember? Tom Elmhurst? Oh, Christ.
There's a whole bunch of people.
Grammy Night also included tributes to and performances by two icons adored by gay men and deified by drag divas, Dolly Parton and Diana Ross. But ultimately, the LGBTQ night belonged to triple Grammy winner Brandi Carlile. Carlile's The Joke won in the Best American Roots Performance and Best American Roots Song categories, and her By the Way I Forgive You was named the Best Americana Album. Her performance of The Joke was a showstopper. We've combined it here with two excerpts from her acceptance speeches and the backstage press conference.
You're feeling nervous, aren't you, boy? With your quiet voice and impeccable style. Don't ever let them steal your joy and your gentle ways to keep them from running wild. They can kick dirt in your face, dress you down and tell you that your place is in the middle when they hate the way you shine. See you tugging on your shirt, trying to hide inside of it and hide how much it hurts. Let them laugh while they can. Let them spin. Let them scatter in the wind. I have been to the moon.
It's our first Grammy! This means so much to me, and Phil Hanseroff, and Tim Hanseroff, and Dave Cobb out there who wrote this song and brought the best out in us for this song. We can't thank you enough. Everybody at our label, Greg Nidell at Elektra, our manager, Mark Cunningham, Will Botwin, my wife, Catherine Carlisle, and my two daughters, Evangeline and Elijah. There's so many people to thank, but I'm violently shaking right now.
You get discouraged, don't you, girl? It's your brother's world for a while longer. Gotta dance with the devil on a river to beat the stream. Call it living the dream. Call it kicking the ladder. They come to kick dirt in your face, to call you weak and then displace you after carrying your baby on your back across the desert. I saw your eyes behind your head. But you don't look scared.
Americana music is the island of the misfit toys. I am such a misfit. It is this music that has shaped my life and made me who I am and even given me my family, Tim and Phil. I came out of the closet at 15 years old when I was in high school, and I can assure you that I was never invited to any parties and never got to attend a dance. To be embraced by this enduring and loving community has been the dance of a lifetime. Thank you for being my island.
I just had a question about the island of misfit toys. You said it tonight. What does that phrase mean to you? And was that specifically about Americana or just kind of the musical sphere you occupy in general?
I feel like compartmentalization of genre is not entirely a good thing. But when it comes to genre, I'm really quite fond of the one that I come from because I feel like it's a genre that looks around and it notices people that aren't being seen everywhere else. And it picks out people that it doesn't feel has a place, and it gives them a platform if they think that their music is exceptional. And the way that I've been embraced by Americana music and roots and country music has been heartening to me as a gay kid from Seattle. It's been a big deal in my life, and I appreciate it very much.
That was Lesbian 2019 Grammy Award winner Brandi Carlile. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Brian DeShazer and Michael LeBeau, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from John Dyer V. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Christopher Matthews, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can join them by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WLSL St. Leo, Dade City, Florida, Contact FM Hamilton, New Zealand, KRFP Moscow, Idaho, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.